Welcome to the IBM Podcast Network.
You're listening to the Drinks and Destinations Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Drinks and Destinations Podcast. I'm Samira. I have Rujita with me. And today is going to be a very exciting episode, Rujita, because we have a very special guest with us as well, right?
You're right, Samira. It's going to be very interesting because we have Mr. Kailash Gunnani, the chief winemaker and the co-owner of York Winery in India. And he is going to tell us about how wine is made. He's also going to talk about the story of York, and he is going to tell us, give us tips on how to pair wines with food.
Yes, absolutely. And I think when you introduced him, you said chief winemaker. Chief, yes, being the operating word over here, because we are going to find out what all he does.
He's and a multi-tasker. He is the youngest chief winemaker in
apparently
the country.
Apparently so. And he's going to be chatting with us in the Wine 101 section, the D&D segment, and the Pair It Up segment. So let's begin with the Wine 101 segment right away and dive into it.
Wine 101.
Hi Kailash, how are you doing today?
Great, Samira, how are you?
I'm very well.
Hi Rujita.
Hi Kailash.
Alright, so the first up question in the Wine 101 segment that we have for you is, how is wine produced? And we want to know the whole process from the vineyard to the bottle.
So we harvest once in a year. So it's, you know, it's an agricultural produce. So we get a crop once in a year, which is like 365 days. Mm-hmm. And we have different ways of producing whites and reds. And there's also rosé, but rosé is more like it's a wine made in like a white wine, but out of red wine grapes. So it takes about, from the moment we harvest, it's like a ticking time bomb. You know, you have to make sure you do everything right. You have to do it at the right time. And the turnaround period from when we harvest to once we convert from juice to wine, so it's grape juice to alcoholic liquid, it takes about 15 to 20 days. And from once we've picked it in the vineyard, we have to start processing it immediately in the winery, because, you know, there's all these live, it's a living thing. There's all these bacteria and everything in there, which, you know, you need to make sure it's the right thing is happening. So white wine, we press it straight away. We get the juice, we separate it from the skins, and we ferment it. It takes anywhere from 8 days to 15 days. Sometimes it's also gone up to 20 days. There's like really, really long cold ferments. And from there are some batches where I would put it in barrels for aging. There are some I wouldn't put in barrels, so I'll just leave it in tank. I'll let it age in tank.
So the fermentation happens in tank, the first fermentation.
Correct, correct. Yeah. And we also do fermentation in barrels. Okay. So it's very interesting. You get very different characteristics in barrels, because there's also a lot more oxygen exchange through the pores of the barrels. And of course, you get these, you get a woody flavor, you get some vanilla characters, you get some sweetness. So it's very interesting to blend some barrel wine into your batch, which is fermented in tank. Mm. Just makes for a very interesting, you know, adding complexity to wines. Mm. Yeah. So that's with the whites. It takes, you know, the minimum time you can process a white wine is about 3 months. You need to give it that much time. You can go up to a year if you're aging the whites in barrels. And reds, we keep our reds on skins. So it's fermented with the skins. Yeah. That's how you get your color. That's how you get your flavors. That's how you get your tannins. We keep our skins in contact with the juice for up to 25 days in some cases. These are like the best vineyards. And after that, we press it off the skins. And then they go into barrels, or again, they may go into barrels, or they may stay in tanks.
So just to make our listeners understand, when you have the skin in contact with the juice, that adds a lot of characters and a little bit of tannin to the wine as well, because the skin actually gives the tannin effect to your wine.
Exactly, exactly. So it's a very critical process, because your entire, you know, the style of wine you're making is completely dependent on those 10 to 20 days at the start. If you want to make a wine that can age long, you need to have more color, you need to have more tannins, you need to make sure you have a good level of extraction. If you want to make an easy drinking wine that's going to be consumed within a year, so you don't really need to, you know, extract a lot of tannins out of it. So you need to know what you're going to do with your grapes the moment you've harvested. In fact, even before you've harvested the grapes from the vineyard, you need to know what you're going to do with it.
There's a lot of work that happens in the vineyard as well.
A lot. Yeah. And, you know, our sampling, I mean, I've already started visiting vineyards now. Mm-hmm. Although I'm going to be harvesting them in February. Mm. So, you know, we're in November. So the work is ongoing. So we have to go, we have to monitor, you know, what's happening. We have to ensure that the right amount of crop is there. So we have the right yield. We don't want to overcrop the vineyard too much. So, you know, there's a lot of things. Even before harvesting, we go regularly, we sample, we look at the parameters of the juice that we have in the bunches. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's a lot of time and effort, a lot of planning, and it's a product of nature, so things are always changing. You know, suddenly it'll get cold or it'll get warm. We've had rain a few years ago.
And yeah. Hailstorm so, 1 year.
Yeah, exactly.
That was really
bad, that's actually the worst
vineyard.
Because you know, you're putting all this work for an entire year and you have one incidence of hail and that's it, all your work is undone.
Yeah, and with the climate conditions changing these
every
days
year.
So much, so is there anything that you have, like, is your safety net for, like, the
no, I mean, it's one of those things, you really can't have a safety net.
Right.
You just do the best you can, and just, you know, you got to keep an eye on the weather, you got mm-hmm. to see what's going on, and you have to plan according to the weather. But, you know, if it starts raining, if it is hail, you really can't do much.
Right.
There are cases where, you know, if my vineyard is almost ready to harvest, but it's not there yet. Mm-hmm. So I've had to, you know, just harvest it anyways. Because having, you know, crop which is good, if it's not excellent, if it's good, that's fine. Rather than having crop that's bad.
Bad.
Or just something I can't do anything with.
True.
So yeah, the rule I follow is that plan A never works. I always go with that. It's always has to be plan B or plan C.
Right.
Yeah.
So now coming back to the winemaking.
Yes.
We're at the stage of where the wine is aged in the barrels.
Correct. Okay. Correct. So reds, almost all our reds go into barrels. We age them for a period of minimum of 4 to 5 months, up to 13 months. So Aros, which is our flagship wine, is aged for 13 months. Hmm. The longer you age, of course, you get more flavor from the barrels. You get, and longer aging also makes the wine more elegant. So you get more extraction, but over time, all the compounds in the wine, they just bind with each other. Mm. And they just give you this very elegant wine with nice structure, nice balance, good length. So it just depends, again, what do you want to make? What kind of barrels you want to use, whether you want to use American oak or you want to use French oak, which is really the most popular. Mm. There are also alternative oak. There's acacia wood. There is Hungarian oak. There is Russian oak.
Yeah.
I haven't used any of them, but I've come across some really interesting examples and interesting results. So there's just so many variables. You need to know what you want to do, how you want to do it. There is no recipe. There is no formula key to this. This plus this equals this. It doesn't work like that.
So you have to keep experimenting.
Exactly.
And then seeing,
exactly.
Analyzing the result.
Yes. Yes. Ah, okay. Yes.
Great. So that's how the wine is made. And then
yeah.
The bottling?
So once our reds, we almost don't need to filter them because, you know, the structure of a barrel acts like a natural filter.
Okay.
All your colloidal material, all your particles just go and sit at the bottom of the barrel. So we just need to, you know, transfer it out of the barrel. We just do a very, you know, rough filter just to get rid of any unwanted things in the wine. And we go into bottling straight.
Mm-hmm.
And with the white wines, we need to, you know, we sterile filter all our white and rosé wines.
Okay.
So sterile filtration basically means you're going down to 0.45 microns. So at this level...
That's detailed.
Yeah, yeah. So at this stage, there's no bacteria, there's no yeast in the wine. Of course, it still leaves behind the essence of the wine. So all your chemicals, all your colloidal matter, which, you know, helps the wine to age, they are still there.
Mm.
But that just ensures that nothing funny or nothing unwanted is going to happen in the bottle.
So that basically helps you in getting a clean and crisp and
sharp white wine. And it's crystal clear. You look at it in a glass. Mm. You know, having a turbid white wine is not... It's just a visual flaw.
Okay.
Again, it could be a major flaw in a wine. But
yeah.
If it's purely a filtration issue, it's just a visual flaw. But of course, it's a flaw. And no one wants to, you know... drink a wine that's turbid. You know, we want it to be crystal clear and it's bright and sparkly. So yeah, so that's just one of the other small purpose of filtration. But of course, mainly it's getting rid of all the unwanted things.
What about using egg whites? When is it used? Because a lot of people ask you, how can my wine be non-vegetarian? Where exactly do you use the...
So egg white. So we don't use egg white, but it's a commonly used fining agent in wine all over the world, and it's legal. It's perfectly legal. It doesn't have any side effects beyond a certain point. It's a protein. So the egg, so the casein or the protein basically eliminates some of unwanted characters from the wine. The one that is what we use mainly is a clay. It's called bentonite. So that's a very commonly used
alternative.
Correct.
Thing to egg white.
Correct. So that's again, it's a clay. It's something that just precipitates out of the wine. So it's not really there in the wine anymore.
Mm.
So an egg white is used both in red wine and white wine, but yeah, we don't use any of it.
And that happens just before putting the wine in the barrel back for aging.
You could do it at that time.
Yeah.
You could also do it with your whites somewhere in between in the process. So somewhere in between your fermentation before bottling. So you could do it around filtration if you want. But yeah, it's just different fining agents eliminate different things in the wine.
So is there a particular reason why you don't use egg white? Like, you think it makes a difference in the end result?
I've just never had to. I just make sure I take all my precautions right at the start. So that's why the first 48 to 72 hours are very critical. I make sure that, you know, my juice the juice which I've extracted from the grapes is handled in a way that I don't need to eliminate any unwanted things from the wine later.
That's great, I think. And then it's bottled. And do you believe in keeping the wines in the bottle for a longer period of time, like bottle aging or anything?
Yes. So I think the minimum time you need is about 2 months. I think 2 months is a very good amount of time. It really allows the wine to settle in. If you've heard of bottle shock, so bottle shock is a very real phenomenon. Most people
don't realize that your wine, when it's being transported, it could actually affect the wine inside the bottle.
Yeah. So. Like I was at an exhibition, a few weeks back in Hong Kong, and I took some bottles of wine with me that were just bottled a month before that, and they were by the time I reached Hong Kong, those wines were tasting very different. I could not really get any aromas. They were not very expressive. I had to open the bottles. I had to double decant it. So I had to pour it from one bottle to the next, to the next. And I had to leave it, I had to air it out. And then finally it was starting to express itself. And that was purely bottle shock.
And that's the only way you can actually let the wine open up after it's been through long hours of travel.
Exactly. And it was just recently bottled. So that was one of the issues.
So for our listeners, what is bottle shock in a nutshell, in simple terms?
So wine is a living thing.
Right.
It's constantly changing and it's alive. So the moment, imagine if you were to sit in a very tiny space.
Mm-hmm.
A really confined space, you won't be very comfortable. It'll take you a while to get used to that space.
Right. Just think trapped in a bottle. So it's basically wine gets trapped in a bottle
and it doesn't like it.
Right.
It takes time for it to get used to the confined space we've put it in. And then once it settles in, then it starts to really express itself.
Wine is the only alcohol which actually is living even when it's completely packed in a bottle, except any other alcohol, which is once you bottle it,
it's spirited alcohol.
that's
true. So bottle shock is a serious problem with a lot of wines.
Yes.
Wow, and that's a really interesting term that I've learned today.
It's actually the most chemically complex alcoholic beverage.
Right.
So your spirits and your beer. Of course, spirits are not as complex in terms of the chemical makeup.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Beer is to an extent. But I think wine is probably the most complex.
The thing with beer is, once it's trapped in the bottle, packaged, the only thing that matters is the expiry date. That's it. But it's not in the same thing with wine, because wine is also doing its work once inside the bottle, and there's so much happening inside.
Yeah, like exactly. I don't think a beer, like a flavor, would really change.
No,
you
nothing.
Know, once it's bottled and you open it.
Yeah,
right.
So it just
like
matters
for
what expiry date.
Yeah.
Yeah. If it's very close to the expiry date or it's already expired, then the taste would be different. But otherwise, there's nothing that happens.
There's actually this producer in Australia, so they have their beer manufacturer, and so they have this whole range of craft beers. They allow some yeast in the bottle, so it's unfiltered.
Okay,
so it's an ale. Yeast does the work,
and the bottle actually says best after.
Oh,
they don't have a best before date, so actually it mentions drunk best after so and so date.
Wow.
So does the yeast die after some time, and then?
Yeah, so at that point the yeast is dead, and once the yeast dies, it starts to break down.
Hmm.
So once it breaks down, it starts releasing all these brilliant, bready.
So it's
cookies.
A little bit like your sparkling wine.
Exactly.
Or champagne.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So talking about winemaking and sparkling wine. So, you know, it's manufactured in the same way as a white wine until bottling.
Yeah.
So it's fermented, it's aged, it's filtered, and when we bottle it, we add some more sugar and yeast in the bottle.
Yeah, we just discussed that in our last episode about sparkling wine and champagne.
Okay, so so I think the viewers already have an entire idea. So it ferments for a second time.
Right.
And once the yeast is done,
is there
fermenting,
anything that you would do differently for your sparkling wine? Maybe you can talk about that.
So the style of wine that I make is, you know, it's, I call it a Prosecco meets champagne style.
Oh,
so,
it's a blend of
it's,
both.
Yeah, so it's, it's got aromatics in it, which is very much a Prosecco way of making wine, sparkling wine. Champagne wines are more dominated by secondary and tertiary characters, which you get from barrels, you get from autolysis of yeast in the bottle.
Yeah.
So these are really, really complex flavors. But on the nose as such, it's not that aromatic as a Prosecco. And a champagne is more heavier on the palate than a Prosecco. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get the best of both. I'm trying to have aromatics on the nose, and I'm also trying to get some secondary characters on the palate. So you have some, butterscotch and cookies and bread and those kind of flavors.
But the method that you follow is traditional, right?
Correct,
traditional champagne method.
That's right, right. Yeah, it's also the easiest way of making sparkling wine.
Really?
Yeah.
We thought it's a difficult way.
It's difficult in terms of time. I mean,
if you're not a patient
person, then it's very difficult.
Yeah.
It takes a while to get those complex characters. It can go as long as 16 to 18 months, which is a very long time.
So how many months do you let your sparkling wines?
I think our average fits in around 14 to 16 months.
Okay.
Yeah.
And champagne is 18 months, right? Minimum 18.
Yeah, champagne is
minimum
18. They age for a very long time, yeah.
It could go on for 24 months.
Even longer, a few years.
Well, you know, that was very interesting. And I think we covered everything there was in the Wine 101 section about the process of making the wine until it reaches the bottle. And this is just the beginning. We're going to go in for a break. And after the break, we'll be back with the D&D chat section.
Stay tuned.
It was rated Goregaon's most intelligent podcast. It was the best new podcast of the day when it was launched. And now, the irreverent brand of attempted humor and botched education is coming your way. You have many burning questions.
So what is the Brexit? What do mathematicians do, man? I mean,
introducing Simplified, a weekly podcast that deconstructs issues around you, such as, what on earth is Bitcoin?
So Bitcoin is just another currency like the rupee or dollar. The difference here is it's a virtual currency.
Do resolutions and cameras really matter?
They think that just because a number is higher, what they're getting is actually more.
And encryption.
So encryption, okay, it's a process of encoding messages in such a fashion that only the intended recipient sees it in its intended format.
Hosted by Narendra Shanoy, a very wise man who can't stop making B.G. Woodhouse references. And Deepak Gopalakrishnan, who calls himself Chuck, a madman who can't stop making poor jokes.
Naren, what do you call a forest where you find all the latest news?
Uh-oh, I don't have a good feeling about
that. A topical rainforest.
Follow Chuck and Naren as they scour Google and read Wikipedia for you and condense it into language you can understand. Simplified.
helping you appear smarter to an audience that knows no different. D&D Chat.
Hi and welcome back to the Drinks and Destinations podcast, and we have Kailash with us in the studio today. And we were, before going on a break, we were talking about how wine is made and the entire process. Yeah. And now let's just start the D&D chat segment.
Absolutely. And the first question to you would be, Kailash, that what is the York story and how did it all start?
So York is actually, it's the abbreviation of me and my siblings and our names. So oh. My sister's name is Yogita. That's where you get the Y-O from.
Okay.
My brother's Ravi. That's R. And I'm Kailash.
How interesting. So that's how
I just got to know about this story recently. Yeah.
So that's how York happened. Mm-hmm. And so the idea came about in 2004. So okay. we had a farmhouse which was in the growing wine region of Nasik. And it was a dinner conversation where my dad, he really got into wine and he was reading all these books. And he threw out this idea that, you know, what do you guys think? And, you know, at the time I was chasing something else, and he was like, you know, this is something for you to think about. It's something you can work towards, and it's an interesting space to be in.
All great ideas start with dinner.
On the dinner table.
Like, son, we need to have a talk. You know? So it happened 2005. I then decided, okay, it sounds interesting, let's do this. I planned and I went to Australia in 2006 to study winemaking, which it's a program called Oenology, which is just a scientific word for winemaking.
Okay.
And we also started building the winery in 2006. 2005? Yeah, 2005, end of 2005 and 2006.
Right.
And at the time, even my brother-in-law, who was actually really excited and kicked about the entire idea, also got on board in the project because he wanted to be a part of it. So we got started building a winery. And 2008 was our first harvest. I was still in Australia at the time. So we had an overseas consultant who was helping us, you know, get set up and with our wines and everything. And 2010 is when I graduated from college. I worked overseas for a few years, and I got back to India in 2012. So ever since then, I've been, you know, running the entire winemaking program. So we are India's only family-owned and family-run business. So okay. Everything from grape to glass in the market, everything is done by family. So it's me, my brother, my brother-in-law. My dad is more hands-off, but of course he's the one who's really guiding us all and
overlooking the entire
operation. Exactly.
So you're the first family of the wine industry.
Definitely first generation. Yeah.
Right. Wow.
And which was the first vintage for you? What year?
2012. Yeah.
And do you remember the wine that you produced? I mean the wines, the labels that you worked on, or the wines?
So the ones that I made or the ones we made as York. Okay. So 2012. Yeah. And so 2012 was my first harvest, and we also kind of we looked at our entire portfolio and did a little overhaul. So we used to, 2012 was also the first year for Aros, which is a blend of Shiraz and Cab. We used to make, a single Shiraz and a single variety Cabernet. There were two different wines. We just, you know, clubbed it into one and made it even better. We released a new blend, Cabernet Merlot, which is not a very popular blend in India because both these varieties are not that easy to grow.
Yeah.
I think we are probably the second producer to do it and currently the only one. And, you know, our winemaking style, so we just, you know, the style changed. Of course, there was a few common traits with what we had till then. But, you know, I came from Australia, which is very new world. And I also worked with a few French winemakers along the way. So, you know, it's a mix of a lot of different ideas, and, you know, it just...
So you had the experience of new world and old world winemaking process.
Exactly. Okay. And, you know, it's not one is better than the other. I think there are the school of thought, you know, they are both fantastic. I think there are some ideas from the old world which, you know, you can't do it any other way. You know, they have been done for centuries and they are the right way to do it. But there's also a lot of techniques and a lot of things they do in the new world, which is, you know, there's just greater intervention in the process. So you're just playing around with a lot more things. And I think that's great as well. So it's, so I would, yeah, it's just a blend of both.
And how did you adapt to the Indian terroir and the context?
Oh, that was a huge task. So, you know, when I came back, it was not very easy because everyone, you know, including some writers and journalists, they would all say, oh, so you're like the young kid, and how are you going to stand up against everyone else in the industry? Because, you know, there are a lot of experienced winemakers and experienced companies in the country, you know, all doing great stuff. So I tried not to get intimidated. I just went with it. And, you know, I was thrown in the deep end, and I was like, all right, let's just get going. I just did whatever I knew. So there was a little trial and error at the start. I made mistakes. I think there was a few batches of wines that didn't turn out very well. Mm. But, you know, it's just trial and error. You just got to keep doing what you feel is right. And that's what I did. So it's taken me, I mean, next year, 2017, will be my, you know, fifth, sixth vintage. And okay. I think until 2015, so until last year or maybe this year, I kind of know exactly what I'm doing with everything. So it's taken me 2 to 3 years. But, you know, fortunately, I think everyone has really enjoyed the wines. Everyone has enjoyed the style of wines I'm making. So that's been very encouraging. So, and that's just kept me going. So I just know that what I'm doing is not too far off the mark.
And you mentioned everyone's enjoying your wines. So yeah, for York wines, like, who would you consider your target audience? Or who do you think is sipping your wine currently as we speak?
You know, I've seen... So we have a winery. So we have a restaurant at the winery. Mm-hmm. And we have a wine bar as well, which is open all day. So we have all kinds of people.
Rajita, we have somewhere to visit.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, yeah. Whenever we are in Nasik, yes,
it's a fantastic day trip from Bombay.
I have been there a couple of times, but I think it's a beautiful place.
Right. You know, I've seen middle-aged Indian women wearing saris and sports
when
shoes.
When I was there, really? Yeah, I saw like
sari and sports shoes
like a family of you know, father and son and mother. Mm-hmm. They were there and they were enjoying, like, you know, they had a bottle of York in the center. All of them were drinking wine. I was so happy. I messaged Kailash. Yeah. I was like, you know, this is
nice.
So nice to see, like, a
and
whole
it's fantastic
family.
I think that's what we need to see, and it's mm-hmm. it's really, you know, everyone's embracing wine. And, you know, we have, I've seen big families come there with their kids, you know, mm-hmm. the kids are running around and playing in the lawn, and these guys are sitting and enjoying their wines. And, you know, it's everyone. There are, you know, we don't serve alcohol to anyone who's below the drinking age.
Right.
So we, that's one thing we are very strict about. Mm-hmm. If we suspect someone's, you know, looks young, we ask for ID. Mm-hmm. But above the legal drinking age and all the way up to, you know, 45, 50, even more than that. So entire, but the major chunk of consumption is people from 25 to 40. I think that's our major consumers.
Okay. And you've recently made some changes in your winery. We're talking about the wine tourism and visits to the winery. So what are the changes? Can you talk about that?
So so our tasting room has been operational for a few years now, and we've got a new restaurant that we redid 6 months back. And it's focuses on Indian food, but we cook with wine. We do some dishes with wine. We also do a lot of Maharashtrian spices.
I love the food when I had my dinner there. Yeah. It was very interesting. Yeah, I don't know if you have the same chef or you changed.
No, he's still around. He's still around. And, you know, people in India don't like to be restricted to saying that, okay, if I told them you need to drink this wine with this food. Mm. They'll say, oh no, I want to have this food, but I don't want to drink that wine with it. You know, I prefer something else. So what we've tried to do is we have, you know, managed the level of spices in our food to an extent where if you order any wine with it, it's likely to go with it.
Okay.
You know, some wines may be a perfect match. Mm-hmm. Some may not be a perfect match, but it's not going to clash with it, or it's not going to taste bad, you know. So that's what we're consciously trying to do. So that just gives people more options.
So now, coming back to our discussion we were having, so when you're making a wine, and we always look at the labels, and sometimes some wines have vintage, I mean the year which is mentioned.
Correct.
Just for our listeners, to make them understand what exactly vintage means.
So if a bottle of wine says vintage 2016, that means that the grapes that were used to make that wine were picked in that season.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in India, the season is from, let's say, the middle or the end of January towards till March. So if I say a bottle of Indian wine 2016, that means the grapes were picked in those few months.
Okay.
I can sell this wine in 2019 or 2018 based on how long I'm aging it, how I'm producing it, etc. But yeah,
the year has to be that particular period of time when the grape was basically picked.
Exactly. Exactly. It just denotes the season it was picked in. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Perfect. And what does the word reserve mean when you have that word mentioned on the wine labels in context of India? Because we know there are some countries
Correct.
In the world,
yeah,
and like Spain, we were just discussing some time back that the yeah. wine has to be aged for 3 years at least.
That's right.
And only then it can be called a reserve wine.
That's right. It's quite loosely used in India, but I think in so we used to use the word reserve, and the wine we used to call reserve was aged for at least 12 months in barrel,
okay.
and about 3 to 4 months in bottle before we released it. We don't use the word reserve anymore because we don't think we need to. It's just a strategic decision. But I think most producers in India are. I think they're calling reserve wines that they have aging for at least 10 months in barrels,
okay.
in oak barrels. It could be new.
Maybe 8 to 10 months.
I think 8 to 10 months is minimum. I wouldn't call a wine that's aged for 4 months in barrels a reserve wine. It's just not... you just can't do that.
So if you don't mention the word reserve on your labels, but you would still mention the year months of aging on the
Correct.
Back label, right?
Correct.
Somewhere like aged for 12 months in barrel and
right.
something, just to give an idea to the consumer
Correct.
That they're drinking a wine which has been
right.
aged
That's
for
right.
a very
yeah.
long period
yeah.
of time.
So
right.
so AROS doesn't say reserve anywhere.
Okay.
We just, at the back label, we mention, we also have a little neck tag that mentions the blend. It mentions that we've aged it in oak barrels for 13 months.
Mm.
And it mentions that we've aged it in bottle. And that's about it. So it's a reserve wine in the Indian context. But if you look at some regulations in other parts of the world, it may not qualify as a reserve wine.
Mm-hmm.
It's subjective.
Okay.
But yeah, I think minimum 10 months is what I'd say. You know, you need that amount of aging.
And you mentioned that you went abroad to study your wine making.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
That brings me to the question about the education of wine in India. Like,
right.
What is that scenario like? And if someone actually wants to study wine making in India,
mm-hmm.
how do they go about it?
There is one college in Nasik.
Okay.
They teach. It's not like wine making studies.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like basics mm-hmm. of fermentation and the physics and the biology of wine making. And the microbiology of winemaking.
Right.
I think it's a very cultural thing. You know, you'd want to go to a country to study wine that has a culture of wine. And I think it's not only the education and the content. I think it's also the surroundings that kind of you know
right.
that rub off. You know, and then you really absorb all of that. And of course, in such places, you are drinking a lot of good wine, which can influence you, your taste, your style, your preferences, your overall winemaking skills. So yeah, India has a few schools, but I think ultimately overseas experience is very, very crucial.
So it's yet to evolve in India, you would say, the whole wine education system.
Exactly.
We still need a lot of new institutes and maybe technological know-how and...
I think culture is still a very big aspect. Like if I was to be a doctor, if yeah. I went overseas right. or not, wouldn't really matter.
Yeah.
I think there is a culture of, you know, of
so
good colleges
there are
in India.
Not enough people in India probably as of now who are wanting to know or learn this?
So there are people, a lot of curious people out there, but it's yeah. a very long-term process and it's
right.
an expensive process
right,
because,
right.
you know, you're spending anywhere from 500 to 1,000 rupees on a bottle of wine.
Right.
Mm. And you know, it's a want. It's not a need.
Right.
You know, so
for the time being, I think it makes sense to go out and study and mm-hmm. learn, or than actually doing anything in India. We don't have the
correct
technological know-how or skills to actually educate people
right,
about
right.
wine.
Right. There are a lot of Indians actually overseas.
Who are studying
and working.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
There are some in Europe. There are a few in Australia. Some
yeah.
in the US right now, and you know, and they are doing great stuff there.
True.
I think they're really working with the right people and learning the right things. So yeah, it's There's
maybe we'd get to see a York wine school soon in India.
Yeah, not on the horizon right now.
Something to think about.
You know, I'm always happy to have a chat with people who I want to, you know about wine. There's so many people, they come asking me questions, and I'm happy to guide them. So I think it's a little very private school right now, like run by me alone.
Private tutorials.
Yeah, private tutorials, yeah.
So we were talking about, you know, how internationally how people in India are actually going out to study, and how internationally wine has evolved so much.
Correct.
And we were recently in China together, and we were in an international event. So tell us about your experience, and where do you see Indian wines being placed right now in the international market?
So, you know, after the event in China, which was all about Asian wines and spirits, I was in Hong Kong a week, 10 days back, for the Hong Kong Fair. And we were part of the Asian Wine Producers Association. So we had one stall where you could taste all wines from Asia. And, you know, the big shift that's happened is that initially people used to come and say, oh, I didn't know India made wine. And now it's like, oh, I've heard about you guys. And I think that's a huge change.
Yeah.
People have heard about us. People know about us now.
Mm-hmm.
Indian wine in a global context, you know, ultimately, it's not about the consumer. It's first about the trade, because we need the trade to get there.
Yeah. Okay.
And Indian wines are not as affordable, even in terms of export. So there are wines that are just as good as our wines, but cheaper.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, that's the major market. So a lot of people overseas, you know, they're reluctant to import Indian wine because they're not sure how it's going to work. It's not the cheapest. So we have a few hurdles, but, you know, I think Indian restaurants and the diaspora, I think these, you know, a lot of the community, they are likely consumers of Indian wines. And, you know, even non-Indians, so Europeans and Americans, or even British, I mean, you know, these guys, they're very experimental. They like to try new things. Mm-hmm. You know, they're curious. So once
and they're always
see,
looking for a new wine region and to try out wines from a new place.
Exactly. I'd say they are more experimental than Indians. So, you know, probably the Indian diaspora may not even look at Indian wine, but the others will. So, but yeah, I think right now it's a mixed bag of things. We have Indian wines in supermarkets in, you know, overseas, but you know, some places it's purely price driven.
That's true.
So I think it's more to do with the trade and how the trade works and the economics of
and
things.
And the other thing which I think is a big challenge is a lot of other wine producing regions, they have their indigenous grape variety,
right,
which works really well for
Correct.
them, because if I want to try a Greek wine, I would go for a Greek grape variety.
Yeah.
We don't have that in India.
Exactly.
So what are the challenges when it comes to talking about, you know, like making a wine from international grape varieties and not having a grape of our
own? It's not, I mean, yeah, it's unfortunate that we don't have one, but it's not a deal breaker. I think, so what most of the world doesn't know, including many people in India and even people in the trade, they don't realize that we have such unique climatic conditions over here, you know, which is a huge challenge in itself. We are one of the few countries in the world where we harvest our crop before summer.
Yeah.
Right.
And our growing season is winter.
So everywhere else, it's around during September, end of September or August, that's when the harvest happens, especially in the northern belt.
Correct.
But in India, it's February,
isn't
it?
So everywhere in the world, it's the end of summer and the beginning of winter.
Right.
In India, it's the opposite. It's the end of winter and the beginning of summer. So, you know, we don't have, and we have, you know, this 3-4 months of monsoon where it's just raining and you can't really do much in the vineyards other than making sure that you don't have fungus or any disease problems. So, you know, we have really unique challenges here, and that's, you know, you cannot place an Indian Shiraz, for example, next to a, you know, Australian Shiraz.
Just not stand.
And just say, oh, you know, you can't make a one-to-one comparison. You have to look at the challenges that are, you know, that we have to face in producing a good Shiraz. So yeah, I think
But Shiraz does work well in Indian context.
Oh yeah,
right?
It's like the most widely planted red grape in India.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Cabernet Sauvignon, we had a discussion some time back that Cabernet Sauvignon doesn't work in Indian climate. A lot of people have realized
Correct.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So initially when we planted vineyards 20-25 years back, we tried a lot of different varieties. But for, you know, the French varieties, they kind of, you know, got more popular and they propagated and they spread everywhere. A lot of them worked. You know, Cabernet was doing very well. But the problem with Cabernet is that it has a very long growing season. And when the summer sets in early in March, it gets really hot. So it's not very good for the grapes. So we need varieties that have a shorter season. So we can pick them earlier and they ripe earlier.
So you think Merlot could work in India?
No, Merlot is also not a very good grape. It's not done well.
Even that needs a lot of longer period of time, especially because we don't have cold climate. It's warm climate.
Exactly.
So the Merlot would be much more ripe and much sooner.
Correct, correct. We are a warm climate country with a cold growing season.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
It's very weird.
Yeah.
It goes completely against the formula of winemaking.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So
especially Nasik, I think.
Yeah.
Bangalore is still different.
Wow, after hearing this, I'm just glad we have any wine in our country at all.
No, see,
it's going against the odds to get some good
absolutely.
Wine.
Absolutely, it's a huge
and
task.
And that's the reason why we should value what we have in our country.
Absolutely, yeah, have you found respect for all the wine?
I think next time you see a bottle of Indian wine, you need to be proud. It's there at the first place.
I know, I'd be like, wow.
Think about all the challenges that you have to face.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, you know, Rajita, we could go on talking and asking him questions, but we have to move on to our next section. Before that, we are going to get into a break. So tune in after the break.
Hey guys, this is Malika Singhania, co-founder of the blog Stylogram, where we cover trends, fashion forecasts, celebrity style, tips and tricks, and lots more cool stuff. We are launching a new podcast called The Stylogram Show, where I will be speaking to celebrities, designers, models, store owners, and fashionistas. Our first show covers Lakme Fashion Week, where I caught up with some of my super cool designer buddies. So get ready to get your weekly dose of style with me, Malika, on my show, Stylogram. Follow me on Facebook at Stylogram Official and Instagram at Stylogram_Official to hear the latest on style and fashion.
Welcome back, and now we're going to begin with our Pair It Up section with Rojita and Kailash over here.
Pair It Up.
So tell us, what would we pair York wine with, and specifically to Indian food? Because you mentioned that people who come are usually not very open to have this with this particular thing.
Right.
So what would you suggest for sparkling white and red wine?
You know, I think there are a few rules of pairing food and wine, but I don't really, I don't believe in too many of rules. So I think the fundamental thing is you don't want any one flavor to overpower the other.
Okay.
So if you have a really, you know, flavorful, strong wine, you need to make sure that your food is not either lacking flavor or it's not too spicy or full of, you know,
spice.
Yeah, it's just compliment.
Indian food is so spicy.
Yeah. So you could have, if you have something really spicy, you have a sweet wine.
Or a sparkling wine maybe?
So sparkling wine will work better with light kebabs.
Okay.
Or maybe some... If you're non-vegetarian, so you can have some canapés or maybe some shrimps with sparkling wine. That works well. I've had a dal bukhara with arroz, which is like a barrel aged wine. So you know, it's like arroz is just full of tannins and it's full of these woody flavors, and the butter in the dal,
it just
kind of, you know, it just cements everything together.
Nice.
So I once had a rosé with pav bhaji at home.
No way.
Yeah, yeah. You know, it worked really well.
Wow, so all our listeners in Bombay especially, you know.
Yeah, you can pair your pav bhaji with your rosé.
And especially that you have
who
good,
would have thought?
You know, warm climate here in Bombay.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll work
that
really
could
well.
Work, yeah.
And the red, like for the winters?
So winters, yeah, you need definitely mildly spicy food. You can have a good medium bodied red with mutton.
Okay.
You know, a mildly spicy mutton. Yeah, you know we all have a different palate. You know, some of us have a higher threshold for spice, for some it's low. You know, some of us
I can't eat spice at all, spicy food. Yeah. So
you definitely want some mild food with with a not so overpowering wine. You know, maybe like a white wine with something light, like a Sauvignon Blanc.
And during summers, maybe a nice salad with your white wine.
Yes, Chenin or Sauvignon Blanc can't go wrong.
You know, Rajita, really I'm really wondering about the Indian desserts. What would pair up with that? Because there's so much concentrated
Rasmalai,
sugar.
Jalebi,
like if you think of a gulab jamun or a jalebi,
it's so sweet.
Can you actually, and if you would, like if I give you a choice, what would you have?
You know, I don't have a very sweet tooth. I once paired a dessert with sparkling wine and it didn't work because, you know, the
dessert was it?
Yeah,
it was,
I didn't think it would work.
I think it was something very similar to rasmalai. So it was as sweet as that. I can't remember what it was, but I know it didn't work very well because, you know, the carbonation in sparkling wine, it has this very tingly effect on your palate, and that doesn't work with
maybe
sugar.
If it's a demi-sec champagne or something, it could work.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. That could be a...
Semi-sweet. Sugar high.
Semi-sweet.
Or maybe you can have the dessert first and then just wash it down with a
with
sweet...
champagne.
Yeah, with a champagne or a sweet wine. Yeah. Or,
you know, but just, nothing you... which is coming to your mind, which should really go well. And I agree with you.
Like, I love to pair my dark chocolates with red wine.
Macaroons and chocolates and cakes, you can still pair it up. But specifically Indian sweets, I don't think that's happening.
You know, if you want to taste the skeleton of a red wine, have it with chocolate, dark chocolate.
Oh, really?
You can actually taste every bit of tannin and oak in there.
True. Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's a very good exercise.
I'm going to try that this coming festive season.
Yes, I know that works really well. Okay, thank you so much, Kailash.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. It was lovely chatting.
It was great fun.
It was so good to chat with you. And so what are your plans for the festive season? Anything special coming up? Just before we maybe complete the episode?
Well, I'm going on a holiday before harvest. But yeah, I mean, nothing. I think right now we just busy trying to plan for next year's harvest. So on a personal level, yeah, I'm going on a little holiday. But from work wise, you know, all our heads are already on next harvest.
So one last question for you: when you're on your holiday, what's your favorite wine to drink?
It's winter; it has to be red wine. So I'm going to be drinking
any particular wine.
So I'm going to be drinking. I'm not going to talk about York because I don't want to just talk about York. But I think I'm going to have, you know, nice full-bodied red. So maybe like an Argentinian Malbec or maybe Barossa Valley Shiraz.
You're into Malbec these days.
I am, yeah. You know, I've also, you know, been on the lookout for a good Tempranillo from Spain.
I think they are. I love Tempranillo.
Yeah, so you know, those are the kind of wines. So, you know, in our portfolio, the Shiraz and the Aros is a very similar style. Mm-hmm. Even the Cabernet Merlot. So again, you know, something that is a little warm, slightly high in alcohol, lots of flavors, lots of barrels. You know,
sounds
it's good.
Like a great holiday to me, Rajita.
I know. Seriously. Now we need to plan our holiday as
I
well.
I know, which we shall.
Okay, so I think it was a very interesting conversation with Kailash. And thank you so much for being on the episode today.
Thank you.
And so please stay tuned for our next episode on iTunes and SoundCloud. And make sure that you drink responsibly. And you can like our page on Facebook. And you can follow us on Twitter and on Instagram.
Bye. Thank you for listening.
Our podcasts bring all the boys to the yard, and damn right, they're better than yours. But you don't need to stand outside in the yard. Just follow IVM Podcasts on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We might be on Tinder too. Just go ahead and swipe right.